Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels as always, and it is great to have you here for another episode of the show. My guest today needs no introduction. He is the founder of DentalMarketingSolutions.com.au, and of course I'm talking about Angus Pryor. So in our conversation, we are naturally going to be talking about marketing, how to market your practice, how to attract new patients, all the things that you can be doing online, offline, and everything in between. It's a wide-ranging and interesting interview with Angus because he shares so much of his story and you get a real appreciation and understanding about what he brings to marketing. So I really hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. As always, there is a ton of useful, practical, and implementable things you can take away. So do have a pen and paper handy. You're going to want to take some notes on what Angus talks about and implement them into your practice. So without any further ado, here's Angus. Angus Pryor, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you at last, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, great, Jesse. I like hanging around with savvy dentists.
Very good. Boom, boom. Love it. We're going to talk a lot about marketing today, and obviously you run Dental Marketing Solutions. We'll talk about marketing and what dentists need to know and learn about, all that sort of stuff. But you're a Canberra boy like me. You come from the hood, as they say.
Yeah.
But when you reflect on your life, you've got a really interesting background. You had a career as a diplomat. You've had a career in business, and then obviously found your way into entrepreneurship. And I'm curious to ask you a little bit about that background because it gives context to kind of how you ended up where you are. So I'm wondering if you can give us a quick overview of why foreign affairs, why diplomacy, why all of that, and then what was the impetus to move on from that?
To the outsider, it appears like there's no plan, and the truth is there probably isn't. I think what's driven me in my life is achievement, not in a sense of name up in lights, but just kind of doing stuff because it's there. The truth is I was born in Brisbane. At least as a kid, I used to follow Queensland in the Sheffield Shield.
They were tough years, those years too, mate.
Yes, they were. And then I started school in New Zealand.
Yeah.
My dad was an academic and so is a vet. I don't have any dentists in my family, but I have a family littered with vets and doctors.
Mm.
And so I started school in New Zealand and then Dad got a job in government. We moved to Canberra. So for the listeners, I actually went to school with Jesse's wife.
Sister-in-law and wife as well. So too.
Well, yes, of course. Yes. With apologies to Keturah. So yeah, I did most of my schooling in Canberra, and like all good Canberra high school graduates who didn't want to go to uni, I joined the public service. My older brother was in the public service and I loved how flexible it was. I had flex time and it seemed like it was very transportable. You could work in so many different agencies. And so I was backpacking around Europe with my brother in 1990 and the government called an election. Mm. And of course, as an Australian, voting's mandatory. They can't believe that in other countries, but it's true. And so we traveled to Bonn, as it was in Germany then, before the Berlin Wall. Berlin became the capital. And after I'd voted, I just got talking to the guy at the embassy and I was like, oh, I'd love to do this, you know, live and work overseas. And it took me 7 years from that moment to go on our first posting. I worked in the immigration department, but I've been out of the immigration department for a long time, everyone, if you want immigration advice, I'm sorry.
1-300.
No, I've been hit up for that many times. So I served the government overseas for 7.5 years, I think, with bouts in Canberra in between, finished up in Washington, reasonably senior position at the embassy there. And then I started the MBA knowing that I loved marketing and I finished it realizing that I loved business strategy. I was so lucky in Washington because while I was there, the government introduced a program to promote Australia as a place to migrate to. And so I got to sell the best product in the world. I got to sell Australia Like literally, you know, why don't you move your career down under? And that really just lit a fire for me. And when I got back to Australia, I thought, I want to work in a commercial environment. And the challenge in government, of course, is like, well, who else are you going to get that service from? There's no competition. So through a fairly convoluted route, we ended up in Adelaide. I'd never lived there before. And I ended up working in banks briefly and realized I hated that. And then I worked with a woman whose husband worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And I ended up being a drug pusher, the legal type.
The legal type, yeah.
Yeah, for about 7 or 8 years. And I ended up with a fairly senior position there. That's what caused me to move to Sydney. My team, we were selling $25 million a year. So it was a pretty substantial little process. And then, you know, it was kind of like another achievement. It's like, okay, tick that box. What can I do next? And I'd been interested in business for a really long time, but never really done that much. Interestingly, Jesse, have you got siblings?
I do. I have an older sister. I'm the youngest.
Okay, well, I'm the youngest too. And so when I was in high school, I wanted to do business studies. And my brother, you see how ironic this is now, my brother, who's a vet, said, I'll remove the expletives, but words to the effect of, what are you doing with that business? You should be doing some science. And so I did science because my older brother told me to, even though I had this interest in business from a young age. So that's a really kind of convoluted route. I knew I really loved marketing, and I could see that there was a real need for dentists. We have a saying in my business, Jesse, which is dentists deserve better marketing so they can spend more time helping patients. That's a harsh reality. Now, for better or worse, like the best dentist, quote unquote, is not the best technical one. It's the one who's got the best business, and heavily that relies on marketing. So here we are today.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, thank you for that, because what I really love about your introductions, you've been very generous in giving me lots of little segues and entry points into a deeper conversation. And I really want to pick up on one, which is probably a little bit obscure, but I think it's an interesting one nonetheless. And what I wanted to ask you about is, what is it about that role you had within the government that has allowed you to be better as a business person, do you think?
Oh, wow. That is a very interesting question. I suppose the one thing that I had was the incredible diversity of experience with people from all walks of life and all countries. I mean, you think about it, you know, Washington in diplomatic spheres is arguably the center of the world, except for maybe the United Nations in New York or something. And so I was literally dealing with people from just about every country in the world. Embassies, it was weird, you know, like in an immigration context, like my first posting was in Fiji. I've got a lot of Indian friends, by the way. Fiji's basically half Indian. We'd get excited by passports that came in. And of course, in Fiji, you'd see a ton of Fijian passports and then the occasional Tongan or Samoan or something. And then I moved to Washington. I'm like, my goodness, I'm seeing passports from all over the world here. I've always kind of had an interest in different countries and different cultures. My dad ran an international students program, so we used to have people from all over the world coming and having dinner at our house. So that's probably one thing. I think the other thing I'd say, I've got an appreciation about working with government. One of the first things I did when I started this business was got hold of the APRA policy guidelines, printed them out and read them from cover to cover. And I've done that multiple times, and I don't mean this unkindly, but it never ceases to amaze me how people are fearful about, they go, oh, APRA this and APRA that. And I go, well, hang on, that's not what the policy actually says. And for someone who'd worked in that environment for years, you know, I was pretty good at sort of figuring that out. So that's kind of question without notice, but that's a couple of things I can think of.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry for the question without notice, but the thing that I really have observed about you, Angus, is you tend to be able to form rapport with people quite quickly, and you develop a good understanding of whoever it is you're speaking to, and you've got an inquiring mind. And the reason I think that's important from a marketing point of view is knowing your market, knowing who your audience is and so on. And so I was wondering whether the government job and the roles you had contributed to that, because I've just observed that innately about you, is like Angus seems to have this skill set. And I was wondering if that was just you, a bit of nature, or there's a bit of nurture in there and experience and life journey as well. So hence the question. I wanted to pick up on your quote, dentists deserve better marketing. And I really appreciate that. And as someone who has
an interest in marketing and someone who used to do more of it as a service, I've always really been very mindful of the fact that no one teaches that at university. It's not a core skill set. And it has always occurred to me that many dentists are at risk of, frankly, being had.
Yeah.
If it's not something that you know much about, it's easy to be hoodwinked is where I'm going. So I wanted to ask you, just as well, to use cricket parlance, my first questioner might be the loosener for the first
time. Oh, I love it.
Like, I'm a cricket nut. I can go cricket metaphors all night. That's a whole nother thing. But what I wanted to ask you around that is, what do you think dentists really need to understand about marketing so that they can be informed consumers of marketing services?
I guess what I would say is, like, unless you're in a country town in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
and you've got no competition, and even that is really not sustainable from what I'm seeing, I just don't think you can leave your marketing to chance. I mean, my view is that in life, what we should be doing is playing to our strengths. Now, that doesn't mean that you 100% hand it over to the marketers and you just wash your hands. I don't think that's a good approach either. Mm-hmm. But I do think it helps to be a bit informed. The thing that I see when we start working with practice, often what I see is a pretty sort of scattergun marketing approach. It's the kind of shiny object syndrome. It's especially if you're in a CBD or something, Joe Bloggs knocks on the door from XYZ company and says, oh, look, you know, doctor, we've got such and such marketing, in brackets, gimmick. Why don't we implement this? And you go, oh, yeah, let's give that a go. Some other person comes along and they try something else. Then I just don't get a sense of that coordinated approach. Mm-hmm. And so I've had really the great pleasure of working with dozens, hundreds of dentists all over Australia and a few internationally as well. I counted recently, Jesse, I've done more than 10,000 hours of consulting with dentists. And this is the themes that I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
The dentists that succeed and grow, one, they take their marketing seriously. They don't see it as an irritant. Now, this might sound like a self-serving statement, but I'm not saying you have to come and do business with me, but I think they recognise this is not the 1980s. You can't just stick your welcome mat out and be booked for weeks in advance. That's the first thing. They take their marketing seriously. And the second part is that they are looking for a sort of coordinated approach. Here's the latest data. Consumers are exposed to between 2,000 to 5,000 commercial messages every day.
Mm.
You drive to work past signage, ads, TV, radio, et cetera, et cetera. And so once upon a time, they reckon for someone to do business with you, unless they had a howling toothache, they'd need 5 to 7 touch points. Touch point could be signage, word of mouth, online, you know, radio, whatever it is, sponsor of the local football team. And the latest data suggests that number is more like 10 to 20 touch points. I get the dentist's kind of analytical approach of, oh, well, let's see the ROI on that one piece of marketing. And I would have been in that camp 5 or 10 years ago. And now I go, I just don't think it's as simple as that. What I'm telling my clients to do is on their new patient form to list every bit of marketing they do and ask their patients to tick all that applies. And I'm looking for the ones that are never ticked. Because what often happens is they say, well, how did you hear about us? And they tick Google.
Mm.
Well, that's probably the last thing that they did on the back of a dozen other touch points.
Yep.
It's a bit like this thing that Jesse and I are involved in at the moment, the ultimate practice makeover. It's been interesting for me to see, we've been plugging this for the last month or two, that people have gone through the journey of never even having heard of it, and then suddenly they're seeing another email and they see a video, and then people are reaching out to me and going, oh, they moved from not even knowing about something to being vaguely aware of it to starting to have an interest to then actually applying. So that, for me, is the sort of principles that I think dentists need to take in relation to their marketing.
Just to geek out on marketing for a little moment, what you're really discussing is really the stages of awareness increasing, and you're talking about taking people through a marketing top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel.
Yeah.
So help me understand, or help me explain for the listener, really what a marketing funnel is, because people will hear that in literature or hear about it in podcasts or whatever it is. And I know you've got a very in-depth working knowledge of all of that stuff. But for the average dentist out there, it's still probably not their bread and butter, something they're not super familiar with. So I wondered if we could just have a bit of a conversation about that stages of awareness and what might occur from a marketing perspective to increase awareness to ultimately get to that buying decision.
I did actually go back to university, by the way. I was accepted to do economics at Melbourne University straight out of high school, deferred and never took it up. And I ended up doing an MBA about 15 years later. And I say that to say this. Recently, I think Monash University in Melbourne reached out. It could be Deakin. And they've got a sort of an entrepreneurial course, and they've got a bunch of students with a model that teaching the students about, but then their project is they've got to do it with real world businesses. Mm. And from that organization and from the professor who's the least sort of university type professor I've ever come across, I believe they identified 7 steps. Mm-hmm. And so you can look at funnels 2 different ways. In the world of online marketing, it's very, very well defined. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you go to my website now, there'll be some offer there for you to get something for free in exchange for your first name and your email address, and you'll get it, so a free report or something. And then the marketing funnel is probably a series of emails. Mm-hmm. Maybe getting more and more direct. Yeah. I mean, I can't remember what the process is. And that's a typical funnel. So, and there's no reason why dentists can't do that on their site too. We've implemented that with a number of our clients where there's something that a potential patient may want. Mm-hmm. They download it and then automated, they get a series of emails and then an invitation to make an appointment. So that's a sort of more formal funnel. But this research from, as I say, I think it was Monash University, and I'm going to butcher the names, but they talked about, I think the first one was called suspect, mm-hmm. and then it went to prospect, mm-hmm. and then it went to, I don't know what the next one was. And anyway, there was a number of stages, and you could also call that a marketing funnel as well, even though that could occur totally randomly. I had someone contact me this week who told me he'd been following my stuff online for 4 years.
Wow.
I'd never even heard a peep out of this person. And I was like, who do we thank for referring you to us? And he said, I've been listening to your stuff for years.
Yeah, that's really nice though when that happens. It's good. So, mate, let's talk about the integration of online and offline marketing, because you did speak about having a coordinated and systematic approach. And offline marketing, sometimes I call it old school marketing. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I mean it in a way that, you know, what's old is new again. And
yeah,
I don't know about your email inbox, mate. It's probably full like mine.
Yes.
I go to my post box at home. It's pretty empty by comparison. Is there still an opportunity for offline marketing, direct mail, all those sorts of things to be incorporated into a practice's marketing strategy, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I would say as a marketer with the kind of background that I've got, like really honestly, my main skill is probably hearing great ideas from other people and implementing them. And a practice somewhere in Victoria told me that they send letters to people who've moved into the neighbourhood. Mm-hmm. And you can get that information off realestate.com.au. I called up an agent and said, okay, so if it says on that website that it sold on the 1st of July, when's the settlement date likely to be? And at the time I was in Sydney, and she said, oh, it'll be 6 weeks. So you could reverse engineer that and you could send them something through the post. Mm-hmm. One of my clients that have done that, and look, this is one example. In pharmaceutical, Jesse, if you read a clinical study, they talk about N equals. It's the number of people who participated in a study.
N equals one in this one?
This is N equals one.
Okay, all right.
So N equals one. One of my clients, you know, they've been sending these out pretty faithfully each month. And we're talking, depending on where you are, maybe 20 or 30 letters through the post once a month. I mean, it's a half hour, 1 hour job once a month for a member of the team.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, we cleaned up this week because they sent one of those letters and someone had moved into the neighborhood. And he said, you beauty, we got the whole family. Great. And so suddenly they've got 5 people out of this. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a place for that.
So how do you integrate that with your digital marketing in terms of strategy? Because you said one of the things you loved was business strategy and thinking about how it all hangs together and understanding that we want to have a comprehensive marketing plan. What's that interactional interface between digital and non-digital marketing? Again, just to have a comprehensive plan.
The truth is there are probably people who would do that integration better than I do, Jesse. My philosophy is what I call local omnipresence.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And so I take the view that, look, there will be some people listening to this who are the kind of firecrackers of the world. They've got big aspirations of growing pretty quickly, and I say good on them. Like, everyone's got their own journey.
Yeah.
And for those people, I would say, like, honestly, within a sort of reasonable, sensible budget, which maybe that's 5% of your turnover, my view is you should be doing everything.
Mm.
I'd start with Google. I'd appear very prominently there in your local area, both on the map and in the organic listings.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be all over Google reviews, all over your Google My Business page, definitely testing Google ads. I've found they can be a little bit up and down depending on what area you're in.
Okay, nice.
Social media. I found social media only moderate in terms of direct response marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is pretty simple, because Joe Public is not on social media to find out about dentists.
No,
like, social media, you're there for social purposes. If you can enter that dialogue and you get those touch points, then it can work quite well. I'm probably missing some things, Jesse.
No, I think that's a really good insight there, mate. And I really like the insight around social there as well, because I think you've got to remember, your audience is there to interact socially. They're not there to search for a dental practice necessarily.
On social media, you basically have to interrupt them.
Mm.
Whereas the beauty of Google is, if they've typed in suburb name dentist, there's a fighting chance they're looking for a dentist, and therefore you should be there.
Totally.
And then inside the practice, I mean, I would say a good referral system is super important. I would say every practice I speak to thinks they've got one, and in my experience, they're not optimized. If I individually interviewed every member of the practice about how the referral system worked, I'd get a bunch of different answers. And that's, to me, that's a bit of a problem. You'll need to be singing from the same hymn sheet there. The other thing I think you can do in-house is tastefully, and I'm going to say that word again, tastefully promote the services that you've got. Like, I don't know if this ever happened to you, Jesse, but a dentist friend of mine told me once that he had one of his patients plonk down in the chair in front of him, opened up their mouth, and the internal dialogue from the dentist was words to the effect of, holy crap, why have you got an implant in your mouth? But he, you know, after choking over his mask, he was like, oh, you've got an implant. And the patient was like, oh, I didn't know you guys did them. I just think we've got to be, like, we're healthcare professionals and we've got to be super scrupulous about ethical treatment and so on. But I feel like for many practices, they go back the opposite way. Don't mention the services that we offer. Don't ever promote that we do anything that someone might actually want. And so for me, I'd say the new patient form. You know, are you interested in XYZ services? You could get some posters made up. And again, like, I don't want blue tack on the walls. Get a set of tasteful matching frames and then let's do spring whitening. Ask us how or whatever. You can get some really nice artwork, nice frames. But what you want is the patient to ask you, because if they ask you, that's half the battle. I mean, I've even worked with practices that get T-shirts made up or badges or whatever. Like, you can do this stuff tastefully.
Yeah.
And for me, I like the more the merrier.
I really like your emphasis on the word tastefully, because I think there's a big difference between someone buying and another person being sold. And so what I love that you're encouraging is people to inquire, so that the energy is in them buying rather than us pushing a service. And I think you're absolutely right. I think as practice owners, some people feel that we can't mention this or we can't mention that. And I'm with you. I think get on that front foot and be a little, I use the word bold cautiously, but yeah, you know, be proactive with that. And I think you're absolutely spot on. And I love point of sale stuff. I think it's the cheapest marketing you can ever do. I mean, you've got an existing database. Sell more to the same clientele.
Yeah. So that, what I'd call internal marketing, whether it's T-shirts or badges or posters or pull-up banners or whatever, and that stuff is so inexpensive to produce. Like, honestly, it's, you know, you can get a pull-up banner which has got a footprint of about 45 centimetres by about 10 centimetres, i.e. every practice in Australia's got room for one. They're like $99 to get them produced at Officeworks.
Yeah.
And then they fold up and you stick it in the storeroom. And as I said, spring whitening or Christmas whitening or whatever. When I worked in the pharmaceutical, at one point I was with Pfizer. Unfortunately, I didn't take a whole bunch of shares in their vaccine production. Anyway, I was at a Christmas party talking to the brand manager for, I think from memory, it was a product called Telfast, is an over-the-counter hay fever product. And I don't know how we got onto this subject, but basically what they had done is in pharmacy, they had what they called Telfast Friday. And so the promotion was that they would get all of the staff. The only thing they had to do for the staff was they got them a set of shirts, you know, like a quite nice business shirts, or I don't know how you describe them. And all they had was the Telfast monogram on their lapel.
Yep.
That was it. And because of the way that industry works with pharmacy, like they have their sales data every day. They know exactly what's going. And here's the curious thing. Without any other sales activity at all, they would get an uptick in sales of Telfast every Friday.
Wow.
Merely because Telfast was sort of almost there subliminally. Look, it probably influenced the staff. I'm putting on my Telfast shirt today. So I look at that stuff and I go, it's not like it says, hey, get your teeth whitened or we're going to kill you. It's not an in-your-face message. It's just some branding.
Whitening Wednesday, is that what we're aiming for?
Whitening Wednesday. I workshopped this with a bunch of dentists once. We came up with really cool slogans. Ask me why I'm smiling, or new year, new look, any of this sort of stuff. And you don't need to say a word, but some patients will ask.
When I was running agency, we had Dreaming of a White Christmas.
Nice. Yeah.
And my favorite one, actually, this is going to sound perhaps a little less relevant for you and I, but one of my female clients gave me a photo of her. She was sitting, it was spring, and she had it, was sitting at the beach, and she had her dress or skirt just above her knee. And the tagline we put to that ad was, I wish my teeth were as white as my legs. Because she's trying to tan. You can have a lot of fun with this, though, can't you?
Yeah.
What's the most fun ad or marketing you've done, Angus, or seen, or what's something that you can, because marketing is creative and it's fun and it's good. What do you enjoy?
It's hard to think of one specifically. Well, look, there was a dentist that I work with. The one thing about marketing is there are some things that are common. Like my view is every dentist in Australia should feature prominently in Google. I mean, Google's got a 94% market share in Australia. The number of Google searches, I think it's like 35 million a day in Australia. That would be one that I think everyone should do. But this one, I thought, was a brilliant example of knowing who their ideal client was. Now, I have a feeling it was like people working in mines or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did was they ordered in from China. They got 1,000 pairs of those slippers like you get in hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, God knows how they knew this, but I suppose the answer is they got close to their clients. They discovered that these guys, it's a bit funny really, but they'd come back from the mines or whatever, and then they'd wash themselves off and then get out of the shower dripping wet and they'd put these slippers on. They had 1,000 pairs of these slippers that they would give to their clients. And because they ordered 1,000 of them, they landed for about $2 a pop. It was nothing. And yet this was something that these clients were wearing every day. So yeah, I thought that one was pretty cool.
I love that. That's excellent. That's really cool. Hey, Angus, we've covered a fair bit of territory. We've been uphill and down Dale a bit, and you've been really generous with your knowledge, as you always are. And so firstly, thank you for bringing such good marketing knowledge to the dental profession. I think that it's always nice to have a trusted source in the industry, and thank you for being that person. I've got two last questions I'd really like to just finish with if I can. And the first one is, if you could whisper in someone's ear or tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, don't do this, do that, or you're making it, you know, this boo-boo over here, or you're about to step in the dog poo there, what would be that common thing you'd kind of warn people against? And then equally, the second follow-up question is, if we had the gospel according to Angus around marketing, what would be two or three things you'd leave us with there?
Well, I think the most common mistake that I see in dentistry in relation to marketing, assuming that there's any marketing happening at all.
Yeah.
I mean, look, happy days. If you don't need to market, that's fantastic. The future's not there. I mean, I've been tracking the numbers for the last 5 years, and typically the number of dentists in Australia grows at about 2.5 times faster than the Australian population.
Mm.
So if you don't need to do any marketing at all now, that's great.
That'll change.
It's a case of when, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say the number one mistake that I see is practices, like honestly, I'm probably going to get some hate mail for saying this, but I see...
No hate mail allowed on this show.
Okay, all right, thank you. I see so many dental websites And I find myself going, who was this written for? Because what it feels like is it was written for, and I actually have dentists say this, it's basically, I feel like saying, I'll tell you what, come to us, I'm going to build you two websites.
Yeah.
I'll build you one which you can show your friends from uni.
Yeah.
And they'll go, yeah, yeah, oh, that's good. Yeah, oh, yeah, nice website, Jesse. I really like that one.
Yeah.
And then you can have one for consumers who don't speak dentists. And the number one mistake I see is that it's a, not just websites, any of the marketing material is basically you've got to step outside the industry and say, well, what? How do your patients describe this? And I see it in terms of jargon, and I see it in terms of trying to stand out and be different for stuff that just ain't. I mean, it's like, we're gentle when we're friendly. And I'm like, oh, no, really? Like, so every dentist in Australia thinks they're gentle and friendly. It's not that those are not important. It's just that those things are terrible at distinguishing you from your competitors.
Can I tell you something really funny about that, actually, Angus? Small side note. When I was in the Navy and I left the Navy to go into private practice for the first time, I went into a practice here in Canberra. I won't mention the name of the practice. And the owner of the practice was really good sense of fun. And this is when the Yellow Pages was a thing. And every, she was trying to find the name for her practice, and it was Gentle Dental, We Care Dental, you know, the sort of thing you're talking about. Yep. She thought, I want to call myself Ruffer's Guts, don't give it. You know, kind of dentist, just for a bit of a laugh. And then in the end, the other thing she wanted to call herself was really effing good dentists. Bit of fun there. So you're quite right. Caring and gentle, they've become a little bit.
Caring, gentle, experienced. I'm trying to think, because I did an audit recently for a presentation.
State-of-the-art technology?
Yeah, there was another one. It'll come to me in a minute. And I just was able to find the same terms over and over. Do you know Mark Costas, Jesse?
I do.
Yeah, so a mutual acquaintance, Mark Costas. He talks about these things as being tickets to the dance.
Yep.
Like if you're gentle and you're friendly, tick, you get to go to the dance. You get to open up a dental practice. But none of that helps you stand out. So to answer the second half of your question, at the risk of sounding self-serving, unless you've got some real creativity in the practice, you probably need some marketing help, because I see so few practices who genuinely stand out. And in my experience, that's usually because they've tried to do it in-house and it hasn't worked. So that would be the first thing. I banged on about Google a bit. I just think you just can't ignore the numbers. I think if you've got a poor Google presence and you've got one or two Google reviews, you're missing out on, who knows, 30, 40, 50% growth in your practice. That's probably two. And I guess the third one I'll say is figure out who your ideal client is. Look at your data. You're going to be tempted to say, but Angus, I want to serve everybody who's got teeth, or even better, if they've got none.
Yeah, but a credit card.
If they've got a pulse and a credit card, I'm interested.
The pulse is optional, mate.
Yeah. I just have to say that's a mistake. Like trying to be all things to everyone is a big mistake. I mean, let's put it this way. You could say a Toyota Corolla and a Toyota Hilux, they've both got four wheels and four doors and a steering wheel, and they'll get you from A to B, but they're completely different cars. For the listeners, like figure out what your ideal client is. And the way to do that is just look at your own data. Have a look at over a 12-month period, what is the most amount of money spent by your top 30 patients? Who's the 30 patients who spent the most with you? Because this is what spending money with you is a proxy for trust. They trust you because they've spent lots of money with you. If they didn't trust you, then they wouldn't do that. And for the team, imagine walking into a day, Jesse, where you look at the books and you go, oh, my goodness, it's Mrs. Jones. Like, she loves us.
Yeah.
And we make ethical recommendations and she does what we say. And, oh, my goodness, it's Mr. Smith at 10 and he loves us. Like, imagine a day like that. And you can only do that when you look at your data, figure out who your ideal client is and speak to them through your marketing. So when they see that, they go, oh, my goodness, they're talking to me.
Yeah.
That, for me, that's probably the little trinity there.
Lovely, mate. I love a good trinity. So thank you for that. Ladies and gents, I would really encourage you to head across to Ancus's website, which is dentalmarketingsolutions.com.au. There is a download there. We know that because you told us. I would encourage you to download it. Download it and find out what a nurture sequence is, because Ancus will be serving you lots of marketing gold in that nurturing sequence and lots of really good educational things and good things to think about as you go through marketing. I've had a look at the website. It's gold. There's lots of good stuff. Please do check it out. As Molly Meldrum is fond of saying, do yourself a favor and head across. Angus, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us today. You're an absolute scholar and a gentleman, and I always enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks so much, Jesse, and thanks for everyone tuning in. You too can be savvy dentists.
Boom, boom. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.